Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good friend and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
Going really well. I have been looking forward to this segment brought to us by Training Pros. Today, we're going to get a chance to visit with Senior Manager Learning Technologies with Auto Trader Group, Mr. Corey Colton. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. How about giving us a quick overview, if you will, on Auto Trader Group? What's the mission and purpose of your outfit?
Auto Trader Group is one of the Cox Enterprises divisions, and it started out as autotrader.com, which I'm sure you're all familiar with.
Yeah.
Over the course of the last few years, we have acquired Kelley Blue Book, Bin Solutions, vAuto, and HomeNet, which are some software companies. Kelley Blue Book is another web media company. And last year, we became officially Auto Trader Group.
But even pre-autotrader.com, were you just Auto Trader, like that magazine?
We bought Auto Trader, the magazine, and then about 15 years ago, Cox Enterprises started Auto Connect, which was the first online auto marketplace, and they switched the name over to AutoTrader.com.
And then it became a whole digital outfit, right?
I mean, digital only. Yeah.
So what does a senior manager training learning technologies do? What do you do out there?
Colleagues of mine are responsible for creating learning for employees, and other colleagues are responsible for delivery of that training. Our team owns the technology platforms that make it accessible.
So how is what comes first, the platform or the like learning objectives and the learning platform? You know, who leads?
Ooh, chicken and egg. It's the eternal question, really, but really the learning management platforms started the whole thing when we had to start tracking compliance training as an industry, a learning industry. Business needs always lead, hopefully. So what's the problem we're trying to solve for, and then how do we solve for it, and what does that look like? So does it turn out to be classroom training? Does it turn out to be e-learning? Does it turn out to be mobile? How do we make it accessible? What's the best way?
Now, but how does that bubble up from your organization? Is somebody in a certain area say, hey, we have to teach a bunch of people this, and this is what we're thinking about doing, and then they come to you and they say, does this fit in the existing platform, or do we have to go outside and come up with different?
Platform's always secondary.
Uh-huh.
So it can come many ways. So it really bubbles down from the business strategies. So you have a key initiative. There is or might be a training component to that key initiative, a learning component, and then it gets created by the instructional design team to meet that objective. The platform's always secondary, so we try to fit the way we deploy it to the need, and sometimes there's a clash between what the technology can do.
What they would like it to do and what it can really do.
Right. It doesn't wash windows and vacuum floors, which a lot of
people
think.
You can't just put like an iPad out and then it sells somebody something.
No, right.
You haven't figured that out yet.
Exactly.
So how many learners are we talking about? You're serving a pretty big group here, aren't you?
In the industry sense, not overly large, but very structured and very specific learning group. So Auto Trader Group has 3,800 employees, which is small from a company perspective. But we have a lot of learning needs out there, from sales to customer operations, technology, product training. And as you can imagine, in a web media company, our products are changing constantly. So there's a need to be innovative and flexible in how we deploy learning.
So are you finding that some devices lend themselves to certain types of training and others to other types of training? Or do patterns like that start to emerge?
Yes. So one of the things that we're trying to solve for, one of our ultimate goals, is learning anywhere, anytime, on any device. So we are now getting to the point where technology is catching up with us. And technology is now starting to influence it, right? So previously, the training organization was central to the task, and then the learners were outside the circle. Now we have to make the learner centric. So learners are going home at night, going on Google, going on YouTube, going on the web, and they're learning constantly 24 hours a day. And if we don't have the technology to enable that at work, we're basically shutting off the learning methodologies that they're learning in their daily lives.
So when you say it's kind of platform agnostic, so on their, if they have an iPhone, an Android, if they're on their iPad, like they can learn, there's ways for them to learn. It doesn't matter what device they have.
Well, that's the goal. That's not where we are right now. And there's a lot of...
So, like, on my Xbox, I can't learn?
Well, you probably could. We could talk about that. We want it to seem calm on the surface. It's the old duck or swan thing, you know, and then underneath we're doing a lot of paddling
right, exactly.
in the background to make it happen. So we had a sales mobility project at the company that sent out 1,000 iPads and iPhones to the sales force, and we enabled a mobile learning platform for that. So in the meantime, within the past year, the company's gone to a bring-your-own-device strategy, and so we had to shift gears
right.
fairly quickly to make that mobile learning interface available for any device, which we are just about at the point of doing.
But what a gift that must be also for the line manager who has to support, reinforce, and coach those new desired behaviors to via technology, have access to the content that they want to, you know, want to coach around out there in the field. That must be a real gift and a real advantage, huh?
It is. I think that's in the infancy right now, is getting those managers used to using their devices to help coach and find the information that they need to drive business results.
Ned, are there certain areas of the company that are more open to doing this and certain ones that are less? You know, like...
Yeah, what's his name? The guy resisting.
It's Bob. Bob. If I can only get Bob. Now, you know, are sales more open to it than operations? Like, you know, each group has different objectives and they're under different pressures, so I would...
Well, they have different objectives and they have different infrastructure. So when you talk about a group like, not particularly our customer service area, but any customer service mm-hmm. area is really tied to their desk and to a desktop computer
right.
or laptop, right? So they don't have the need for mobile learning necessarily.
Sure.
So Salesforce is really the first place where you find this happening mm-hmm. in a lot of companies. In my old world, when I was at Citigroup, it was the investment bankers because they were on the road.
Right.
They wanted their compliance training available when they were flying, when they were traveling.
Like kind of their dead time.
Exactly.
Right.
So the Salesforce is usually where you find this first, which is what happened with us. And we launched a major mobile learning initiative in the fall to support our fall product releases.
Now, when you do something like that, are they like, wow, thanks, that's great. Now I can access it wherever I'm at. Or are they like, why are you making me do work during the time when I used to be playing Angry Birds, you know?
The answer to that is yes. Whenever you launch a new technology, you generally have 30% of the people that love it, 30% of the people that hate it, and the 40% in the middle that are neutral.
Right.
Right? So it's a change management process.
Mm-hmm.
Our folks were used to a lot of heavy touch classroom training with great cookies and terrific lunches and flying in. But they also wanted to not be away from the field and away from their customers for long periods
right.
of time. So it's striking that balance of giving them the high touch that they need to make sure they understand it, but also making it available and changing the way that you're actually teaching people. So it's not about making them memorize facts and figures and pricing and tools. It's about showing them where to find it when they need it.
So there's the clear advantages of access and speed, but also capturing learning this way and distributing in this fashion has got to really lend itself to consistency and repetition. And so it's probably a lot easier to make sure that the messaging is consistent. I mean, you've always got your best instruction out there to everyone, and I would think providing for repetition would be a lot easier than with the old stand-up kind of training.
I think there's a balance there. So we talk about social learning communities, right? So if the learning groups are not involved with the social learning communities, how do we make sure that the learning that's going out there from their peers and colleagues is the
right
learning? So we have to put, unfortunately, structure around that more informal learning. So informal learning has to become more formal. And so how do we get that balance for the learner of learning from each other, supporting each other, that sort of Wikipedia culture, but also making sure that there's some sort of governance above it to say, no, this is not what we really said. Here's the real answer.
Right, just because Bob's got a cool way of doing
right.
this, maybe that isn't the way the company as a whole
exactly.
should be doing this.
Exactly. So there's process, there's standardization, there's governance, and it really changes the skills needed for the rest of the learning teams, because it's no longer create a binder, put everybody in the classroom.
Right. And just because you're good at that doesn't mean you're good at facilitating mobile learning or e-learning, right?
Or virtual.
Right.
Right.
Now, is there still a place in your view for the stand-up instructor-led training?
Yes. So in my view, and this is my own humble view, there's always going to be a place for classroom training, especially when you have to practice skill change, right? So leadership training, management training, coaching, putting concepts into practice. But I think that there's new technological ways to get around some of that as well. So in our fall releases training this fall, our vendor enabled a functionality where users recorded their own user-generated scenarios for sales calls and then uploaded it to the mobile platform, which then triggered an approval notice to their boss to go in and view it and say, yes, this is great. No, let's redo this. Hey, let's rethink the way you're presenting
this. So if it's
this.
Great, then what's the next step after that? If they say, yeah, that's great, then now what happens?
Well, then they've proven their, what we call in the industry, their level two knowledge transfer, right? Uh-huh. And they can demonstrate the learning. One of the things that we did this year was we had some experts reviewing those videos and trying to pick the best of the best. Mm-hmm. Those videos become learning tools.
And then they're archived. It's a library that Correct. Anybody can access whenever they want on
Correct.
Any device.
And Correct.
So it all kind of flows together.
Right. See how Susie presented this product and had a win with the dealer.
You know? Right.
And then that content has the credibility of that peer-to-peer credibility, because you've got people actually carrying the bag that are putting
right. It's not a hypothetical. This is a real life example.
Right.
Right.
So it's more powerful.
You've been laughing at me with my idea of holographic host.
We're
not going to have to be here at some point. We can just phone it in.
No, that's what I said. We're going to have an iPad here talking to him.
Right.
I'll be on the beach somewhere.
So you mentioned Citibank earlier in the conversation. What is your backstory? How did you arrive at this point in your career?
How long do we have? I moved to New York many years ago to pursue a career in music, and was doing some consulting and temping work at Citigroup. And eventually when I realized that
they have a lot of musicians there.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Singing bankers. Yes. Yeah. I was doing a lot of temp and consulting work in the learning development department at Citigroup in the corporate center. Mm-hmm. And when I realized at one point that what I wanted more than a musical career was a steady paycheck, I got hired on there, and the rest of the career was completely accidental.
So how's the music? Still in the back burner? You must still do some. Musicians never just shut that off.
It's on back burner and front burner. So my second job is as president of the board of an opera company, a local opera company.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
And I do some performing here and there, but not nearly as much as I used to.
Well, it wasn't very long ago that sitting in that very chair and talking at that very mic was a gentleman from the ROI Institute, Jack Phillips,
yes.
talking about learning measurement. I understand this is a hot topic for you as well. Speak to that a little bit, if you will.
Yes. I actually went through the ROI Institute training this past year, and I'm extremely interested in how do we prove that what we're doing is the right solution and that it's effective? Mm-hmm. And then if it's not, how do we change it? And I think that rather than get what we call the 2 a.m. call, where the CFO and the CEO call you and say, how do we know that you're proving value to the organization?
Right. You're trying to get ahead of that.
We're trying to get ahead of it. We don't want the 2 a.m. calls. So we're looking now as an organization about how do we measure the effectiveness of learning and speak in the language of the business and of the finance department to say, hey, we had a 1.5% ROI, a 1.5 ROI on this project. So for every $1 million we spent, we brought in $1.5 million of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to look at ways to measure those programs, not only from a learning perspective, but from a talent development perspective. And it's a very new field, very amorphous. But any finance department that's worth its salt will have dollar figures associated with any kind of a talent metric, and we will be able to find a way to monetize what we're doing. And if it's not working, then we know that we have to have a different conversation.
So now, can you walk us through a scenario where you kind of put an ROI on a learning program that you've done?
Again, like what's we're key in number? Our infancy.
But what would be a key number? What are the stuff that you're looking at to determine if this has a positive ROI?
There's a lot of stuff. So, again, sales is the easiest place
right.
to do this because you're doing training on products.
They're like the guinea pigs for everything.
But you can also do it in HR programs. So if there's a figure, you know, how much do we spend every time we have turnover,
mm-hmm.
right? So if we're doing engagement programs for managers and leaders in the company
right.
and our turnover numbers reduce, how much is that saving the company on a monetary basis, right? So turnover figures are 25 to 200% of yearly salary of that employee. So we can monetize that. So if our engagement scores are coming up, if we're getting the best talent, if we're reducing turnover, if we are reducing undesirable turnover of our high potentials in the company, there's a monetary figure to that.
But how do you drill that down to see that program worked?
There's a lot of pieces to that answer. But basically what you're trying to do is use a lot of the methodologies that the finance group does, which is get the people who are going through the program to tell you how much that learning initiative actually contributed to what we were trying to do. So you've got to you've got to tie the learning initiative to the business result.
Right.
That's the needle you're trying to move. Then you're trying to make sure that your objectives meet that needle push. And then you have to go to the people who are in that program to tell you, I went through this training, the needle did move, I'm doing better, my turnover is down, and 10 to 15% of that is due to this learning initiative. Then we can actually monetize. So how much did the learning initiative cost? Okay, then 10% of the improvement is due to the training. So if we had a
reduction,
it's all math.
What you've accomplished in learning technology, it's admirable, it's enviable, but let's save some of your colleagues a little heartache. What mistakes or advice might you share with some of the folks that are on the same journey, but maybe not nearly as far along as you guys are?
Oh, good question.
That was a fantastic question.
It was. That's why you do it.
Sorry. You want us to edit this out?
Excuse me?
We'll edit the whole thing out.
No, it's fine. I would say you have to tie whatever you're doing to the employee and to the business. So you can't just enable a technology platform to enable a technology platform. You have to make it work for the employees. You have to tie it to the business strategy. You have to think about whether it's a shiny object or whether it's something that's really going to add value to what you're doing. There's a balance between trying to deliver what the training organizations want the platform to do and what the platform can do, and level setting those expectations, right? Especially when you're doing an enterprise platform, you're really moving more toward a vanilla than a customized,
mm-hmm.
Especially in this day of cloud technology. You can't do updates and releases if you're going to go custom. So it's managing that, but mostly having really, really good relationships with your business partners and with your technology partners. If you don't have that, it's not going to work.
Now, how does those partnerships work? Like, how do you guys work together so that, because you want a more custom solution, right, for your platforms? Not all the time?
I actually move more toward vanilla, but mm-hmm. you try and choose the platform that's going to meet the most of the requirements. You've got to mm-hmm. start with requirements.
And right.
then you find the platform that's going to meet them the most. And sometimes you have a parent company that says, no, you're going to use this platform. And then
right.
you're stuck.
Then
right?
you're stuck, right?
Then it's easy.
Right. Well, it's easier from that standpoint.
Yeah. So when you move from a highly branded, highly customized company like AutoTrader,
mm-hmm.
and we're now moving toward an integrated talent management strategy across all of Cox Enterprises, we were lucky because this time they chose the platform that
you
are
already
using.
but
many times
you're
that
not
doesn't
that
happen.
Right.
So at Citigroup, we had 6 highly customized learning management systems at one point, and the CEO said,
or the CFO probably said.
Well, the CEO came to us and said, I need to know everybody in the company of 400,000 employees that took this course. Well, it took us 2.5 months to find out. And he said, fix it. So we went to one learning management system and trying to get 152 training organizations across corporation on the same page about what they need was about a 4-year process.
Wow, you must be like a change management guru to be able to pull that off.
In my head, I'm a change management guru. In my execution, I'm sometimes not quite as effective.
So subject matter experts, internal and external, or are most of your subject matter experts internal? And my real question is, that must be a real challenge, just herding all those cats. Talk a little bit about recruiting and working with subject matter experts to get the best training put together that you can.
Are you talking about specifically product subject matter experts or internal, the people who own the training initiative?
Well, I'll tell you what prompted the question is you mentioned compliance earlier.
Right.
What little training experience I have is more, I guess, on what people would call the soft skills side, but you got to have people that know what they're talking about in all those areas, and then to get internal people to invest their time and energy to do that and do their own job. I'd just be interested in what that's like.
It is a little bit like herding cats, although the Cox Enterprises companies are private, so the need for compliance is very different than it is in a financial services company. Compliance is pretty straightforward. You've got federal regulations, state regulations, local regulations, and there's your compliance training program. It's just a matter of how do you deliver it and how do you make it interesting. The soft skills programs, you really have to have an HR foundation. So it's not about learning. It's really about what are the competencies that we need in the job roles, what are the skills we're trying to affect, and then the training springs from that. So there are people that call us and say, hey, I want to do such and such. I need a training program. And then we have to ask, well, is it really training you need, or do we need executive coaching, or do we need our managers to be more accountable to coach their own employees, or do we need more performance support around how to have these discussions? So there's a lot of questions that go into that, and it's really an art. My colleagues who do instructional design really have an art to what they do.
So what's the future for this profession and for this technology? Will it expand and also serve disciplines like mentoring and that kind of thing?
This is where I get on my soapbox. So there's a huge future for it. And the issue that we're finding now is that more and more learning is informal, on the job, social, right? So it's learning at the time of need. Traditional LMS platforms do not provide a solution for that. So in our own company, in our own experience, we have an LMS platform where people sign up for classroom training and launch e-learning. But we also have a mobile platform where they get learning on their iPad or their iPhone. Those two systems are not at the moment integrated, right? So how do we bring all those records together? How do we take those on-the-job checklists? How do we take the information that the dealer sales trainers are getting from ride-alongs and coachings and put that into some sort of a structure? So the future really is about, this is a technical term, but the future is really about middleware. So how do we look at putting structure for tracking around all these informal training resources? And what you're seeing now is the replacement for SCORM, right? So SCORM e-learning standards that have been around for 15 years are now starting to be replaced with what we call the Experience API, which is a simple code that can be attached to learning resources. And then all that data is dumped into what we call a middleware piece, a learning record system. And so my theory is that if the learning management companies don't get on board with coding to be able to track all of this informal and at the time of need learning, they're going to become dinosaurs. And I've sort of been on that soapbox for about 2 or 3 years now.
And it's like you said, the technology is moving so quickly and the devices are becoming so powerful. You just have to. It has to be that nimble, right? And it has to be that easy to implement, or else you're just going to figure it out on your own and they're going to go away.
And it's not about the corporate learning folks anymore. It's about the learners. It's about the employees. And if we don't flex to the employees, they're going to find what they need elsewhere.
Right, because learners are being trained by all of the devices and the ease of use of all this to expect. Like I have a Kindle Fire here. I have a Mayday button. I can get help right now. And I think, aren't your consumers of your learning going to expect the same thing at some point?
They do it all the time, 24 hours a day. They go home on their device and they say, how do I cap a crepe myrtle tree? Oh, let me look at this YouTube video.
Right.
They don't need to call an arborist anymore. They just do it themselves.
And then, but from your standpoint, like you're a sales guy in the field and you have a question and you can just go to your peers and say, hey, I got this issue. And then someone can type or text you an answer, or there might be a module to handle that. And then they just hit listen and they watch a 2-minute video and they're, okay, I got this now.
Exactly. And that's where we need to make sure that the learning groups are putting that governance and structure on top of that informal learning so that we know that the right information is going to the right place.
Well, for me, this says volumes about what the culture must be like and how wonderful a place it must be to work at Auto Trader Group, because look at the investment that they've made in sourcing this expertise and capturing it and distributing it, and you and your team, and they're giving you license to go outside and get the exposure that you need. This must be a pretty cool place to work.
It's a very cool place to work. So the Cox companies in general are wonderful to work for. Auto Trader in particularly, I always say, is on sort of the, they say cutting edge, I say bleeding edge. we've been on the bleeding edge of a lot. So to change and transform our learning for sales from completely classroom to completely mobile and virtual in one fell swoop, there was a lot of bleeding. That's both on the learner's part and on the corporate part, right?
Delivering it.
And
delivering
it, right. So we learned a lot, and we got the kudos and the support from the executive team to be able to do this to support our mobility strategy. And we've been able to really learn a lot. I couldn't have learned what I've learned in the past 3 years without working for this company.
So now you think that because you're a technology firm, that just that leap didn't seem so scary because you're used to the speed and the urgency, and you have to be nimble just in technology in general?
I would say it was scary for me. It was probably scary for my team. It was scary for the sales training team, and it was scary for some of the learners. But I think being that we're a web media company, we're always trying to stay
ahead. Right? You're always pushing. Just as a culture, you probably are always pushing.
Right. So do our dealer sales folks take their 4-year-old laptops into a dealer and wait 15 minutes for it to boot up to do a presentation? Or do we give them a device where they can come in
instant
and click a button
on,
and it's right there? Right. So we've got to be, we can't be an innovative web media company and then have our folks have
and
tools
skip on that.
That are,
that's be congruent, right?
Right.
And isn't that funny now and today? It's like waiting 4 minutes to boot up seems like that sounds like a year in your head, right?
Yeah, even still, I try and boot up my Outlook and I go away and get my coffee and come back. Right. But, you know, it's the company is committed to that investment and is committed to staying in the forefront. And AutoTrader is the foremost automotive marketplace.
Right.
And now we're doing some combining in the back end functionalities with our sister company, Manheim. So there's going to be even more happening.
So now in 2014, what are some of the things you're most looking forward to?
We are re-releasing our LMS platform to bring in all of our business units that are now behind the firewall. We will be revamping our mobile learning interface. I'm really looking forward to looking at how we can structure and make available more informal learning to our users. The company and my colleagues are looking at how do we extend the classroom. So if we're doing a training in Atlanta, rather than flying people to Atlanta or flying our trainers out to California, how do we in one fell swoop open up technology that allows people in California to be in the classroom with their Atlanta colleagues,
right,
having the same experience? And we dabbled in some of that last year. The technology may not be where we need it to be just yet. But we tried a little bit of a project to do that, stumbled a little bit. Now we're going to regroup, and it's going to become part of our design philosophy. So how do we extend the classroom?
Now, is that something that everything is recorded and archived in a library form?
No, we're trying to do it live.
So, but live is one thing, but also live and recorded. So if you missed it, then you can still at least get some learning from it.
Right, and that's where the technology may not be where we need it to be yet. Mm-hmm. So how do we integrate the video of the instructor and the experiences of the participants in one classroom so that people in another location can have that same experience and feel like they're there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's where we're going to see some of the explosion in technology in the coming year. I think mobile, a lot of stuff is already there and in place. I'm looking forward to the team learning more about this XAPI to see how we can code informal learning and track those records, because ultimately it's about our talent. And if we can't prove what they know and they can't prove what they know,
it's hard to do the ROI, ROI part of that.
Exactly.
Well, I sure hope that you will include in your 2014 calendar coming back and visiting with us. This has been an absolute delight, and I feel like we've learned a great deal in the last 20, 25 minutes. This has been a lot of fun, man.
Thanks
for coming.
Thank you. I think it's a very interesting field. Not everybody does. Many of my colleagues don't. So.
Well, that's.
They always tell me they're glad I have this job because they don't want it. So.
Well, we thoroughly enjoyed having you, and we look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our sponsors, Training Pros, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you next time on Learning Insights. Although we style.